When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record not so daily, sharing a few thoughts from the mind of a cartoonist. And today I'm going to, well, I'm in the car, first of all, so it may sound a little differently, although I've been playing with my iPhone apps to pursue some better sounding recording with the iPhone. I am increasingly impressed with what these mobile devices can do in terms of content production. But I won't spend too much time talking about that. What I am interested in talking about today is something I hinted at a couple of Thunder Punches ago, in defense of commercial storytelling. Now, this is not, in defense automatically suggests a defensiveness. And, I guess there is a slight defensiveness to this. It's more of me just sort of responding to, you can tell I'm recording in the car. I don't know if you guys can hear somebody's car alarm going off in the distance. This is in response to something I heard on a documentary. I was watching a documentary on the life of Jim Henson. And it was talking about his years, his career doing the Muppets and Sesame Street and stuff. And Frank Oz was at one point in the documentary was talking about how Jim Henson is constantly called a genius and this great success story of being a storyteller. And he says, but people don't realize all of the years of crass commercial work that he had to do before he got to that level of success. And it reminded me about how a lot of people think of doing commercial work, work for hire, creating, mercenary style storytelling, working for somebody else who has an agenda and you're just fulfilling their goal, as being somehow cheap or unfulfilling. And it can be. It absolutely can be, depending on the job. I've talked at length in the past about my work on the Arizona Nutrition Network, on doing comics for them and character design for them, and it wasn't always the most rewarding stuff in the entire world. As a matter of fact, just to remind you, you can still go to eatwellbewell.org to see some of the more ridiculous character designs that I did for them, designs where I don't put that in my portfolio because it's not the kind of stuff that I want to do. But on the other hand, there are parts of that job where I was creating fun stories for kids and it was being seen by hundreds of thousands of children. That's rewarding, especially when what I consider to be my best ideas got preserved in through the editing process. But on the other hand, it was created by committee. There was a lot of voices in the kitchen and some of my better ideas that I thought were really positive and affirming to children, got thrown out in favor of ideas that I thought were more pedestrian and not very interesting. I've talked about this in the past in some of my past episodes, talking about, working on the freelance project that I recently finished, the coloring book project. There were some arguments that I got into with people. But in any case, that's just to say, yes, I do recognize the fact that commercial work has a tendency to be non-fulfilling. However, there are situations where you get hired on to do what you do exceedingly well and just with characters that are owned by somebody else. Case in point, Marvel and DC. I have not worked for them outside of those trading cards that I did for Marvel, but I'm using them as an example that a lot of people point to say, oh, that's death. That's antithetical to a creative life. And it reminds me of something that I wonder about in my own career, about whether or not I might have made kind of I don't want to say a bad choice, but a choice that's made it more difficult for me to find great success with my own personal projects. And that is that I, as you've heard me talk about before many times, I am absolutely fascinated by the kinds of storytelling found in 80s, late 80s, early 90s cartoon stories. And a lot of these cartoon stories were, cartoons created to sell toy products. G.I. Joe, Transformers, Thundercats, etc. And what I'm fascinated by is the fact that they were facing a limitation of time, 21 minutes. They were facing a limitation of having to respond to the toy company's desire to roll out new products in other words, new characters, new vehicles, new locations, and still make this something that would be thrilling for a kid to watch. And I think that in the case of a lot of the Sunbow animation, they did a really good job of doing this. And how did they do it? You know, I've talked about this at length. You pick it apart, and what they were doing is they were using vibrant storytelling, you know, making the characters really loud and getting a lot of double duty out of the dialogue, really expedited storytelling, getting to the point really fast without a whole lot of exposition. And you look at a project like Sugary Cereals, sugarycereals.com, S-E-R-I-A-L-S.com, that whole project was designed to be a love note to that period of cartoon storytelling, encouraging all the participants to write in that style. And I gave them a lot of examples to look at of trying to sort of, do a loving parody, if not a tribute to that style of storytelling. And so, in other words, what I've been fascinated by is working within the limitations of commercial storytelling, trying to please a client. And I think that for the most part, this kind of thinking has served me well in my projects, at least to the extent that I've been really happy with them. But then again, there was a project that I did not too long ago where the listeners, or not the listeners, the readers, people who read my stuff, expressed satisfaction of my work, and that was the Boulder and Fleet mini comic that I did, which you can find at comicsaregreat.com/blog. I'll link to it in the show notes for this episode. And I'll link to the episodes where I talked about the Boulder and Fleet mini comic, because I distinctly remember saying that the way I approached the story in order to get the story told in the time, because to bring people up to speed who aren't familiar with this project, it was a mini comic, an 8-page mini comic that I created and finished in 1 week. I had no idea what I was going to write about. I didn't know anything about the characters or the premise or the concept. All I knew was I sat down on a Sunday night and said, I'm going to do a mini comic this week, 8 pages. It's going to be drawn from it's going to be written, penciled, and inked, and lettered all within 7 days. And I managed to pull it off. And one of the only ways I was able to pull it off and get that story, you know, developed so quickly, because I really wrote it within a couple days, was I thought, who is my client? Years of working freelance as a writer and as a storyteller trained me to be able to imagine my client, to be able to picture them in my head and interpret or anticipate what they would like to see. This is another way of saying this is target audience. Now, let me back up for a second. The artiste, and I'm an artist too, you know, I have my artistic predilections for, looking for things things in comics that only comics can do. I have my nerdy fascinations. But the artiste is going to say, well, no, you shouldn't have any limitations. You should just express yourself freely. And if that is your position, my answer to that is go for it. You know, that's the glory of living in the internet age, is everybody's got an opinion and you can take what you want from whatever sources that you listen to and respond to. And if anybody says something that doesn't meet up with what you hold to be true, well, then that's that. And that's paraphrasing Richard Feynman from one of his books. But this idea of imagining who your client is, creating a profile of a client in your head, is a great way to create a limitation on the project so that you're not stymied and befuddled and buried under the millions and trillions of choices that face you when developing a new story. And as I think about this, because I'm getting ready to dive into some new comics projects, some new stories like Boulder and Fleet. Oh, let me back up and talk about Boulder and Fleet just for a second. So in that case, going back to those episodes where I was talking about this, I said, what would my wife like to read? She is my wife and my life. And that sounds corny, but it's absolutely true. I asked myself, what would my wife like to read? And then I started doodling a bear. And then I started doodling a bunch of other concept characters. Like, maybe the bear has brothers. I'll try that. Well, I don't think she'd like that so much. Well, maybe the bear should have another animal friend. Well, maybe it'll be a cat. I like drawing cats. That doesn't feel quite right. Oh, what if it was a cute little bird? A cute little bird with a spunky attitude. I know my wife would respond to that. There we go. So it gives me a series of – it narrows down my range of choices. I've said this a bunch of times before in the past, but it's worth repeating. If I walk up to you and say, tell me a story – most people are going to go up, 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 and they're going to have to think about it for a second. But then when I say, tell me a story about your seventh birthday party. Suddenly, you have, it's easier for you to whip up an idea relay something to me because I've limited your range of choices, right? Limitations breed creativity after all. So imagining a client or a target audience, I really don't like to say target audience because I think that's too vague. Like, boil it down to a person, an imaginary person that you can profile. And this is the person you're writing for. And it could be you, for that matter. But, I think as a creative exercise, it's fun to imagine a fictional person or a person that you know and writing a story specifically to their tastes and trying to find that tension between writing for yourself and writing for them simultaneously, something you both like. That makes the decision-making process, in my experience, a lot easier. So as I was about to talk about, I'm getting ready to dive into some new comics projects, some little short things like Boulder and Fleet. And I'm digging through all my notes and all the different, doodles and things that I put in my sketchbook, and I'm trying to think, what's jumping out at me? What's making me excited? And nothing's really making me excited as I look through these. There's a lot of good ideas in there, just nothing that's screaming at me, please write about me, tell a story about me, the world must know about me. Nothing's jumping out at me just yet. So my next step is to look through and say, okay, let's imagine a fictional client. What do I got in here that could speak to that client? And in my experience, again, this is just talking about from my own personal experience, that's what usually gets the pumps firing again and gets the juices flowing again is answering that first question of what would they like? Oh, they would like this dragon character here. Okay, well, where's the dragon going to be? Oh, the dragon could be here, here, or here. Well, what would the client like? Well, probably decision B. And once I start making those first initial connections, then the wheels start turning, then the excitement starts building, and then I want to tell this story really badly. As I talked about with the Boulder and Fleet mini comic project, that third day in, I thought, oh my gosh, this might be entirely crap. And everybody's going to call me out on it, but I made a public proclamation that I was going to finish this in a week, so I have to do it come hell or high water. And what saved me was the deadline. The deadline prevented me from dwelling too much on that despair. Again, limitations, right? So if I set myself a fictional client that I'm trying to please, I've eliminated one enormous group of questions or possibilities that could stymie me. Also setting myself a deadline, that does it too. Again, commercial work, you're usually working under deadline. You got to get stuff done fast because clients don't often understand how much time and work goes into these things. So pleasing them and pleasing them on time makes you just barrel through the project and get it done. So even beyond what those Sunbow animators and storytellers and writers and voice actors did to create some truly magical and delightful entertainment, even beyond them as an example, there are practical examples of how commercial storytelling can be extremely effective to make you a better storyteller overall and using the limitations of a commercial job in your own personal projects can get stuff done. Too often, I hear from people, I'm waiting for it to be perfect. We all know this. Intellectually that is an excuse to not work. Anybody who's ever finished something will tell you that that's an excuse to not get work done. Calling yourself a perfectionist, in my opinion, is no different than just saying I have no intention of finishing anything. And you know what? If you don't have any intention of finishing anything, that's fine too. There's nothing wrong with just playing with this stuff. After all, we should be doing it in the spirit of play. But if you want to have some things finished, if you're frustrated by the fact that nothing gets finished, even if you're not a freelance illustrator, I think borrowing, I'm having trouble with pronunciation today, borrowing from the lifestyle and the fleet of limitations that are thrown at a freelancer can be a tremendous asset to getting a project done and letting go of all that anxiety about making it look perfect. I mean, I think that is one of the big enemies of getting stuff done and being a productive artist is this whole idea of getting it done right when what makes a project done right is a combination of so many different elements. It's not just, is it drawn well? Is the dialogue good? Is the plot tight and irrefutable from criticism? it's a combination of all those things. It's 10% of this, 30% of that, 40% of that. And the only way to see if all those percentages even out to an even 100% is to finish a project, in my opinion. But anyway, yeah, it's something that sticks in my craw every once in a while, this idea of people poo-pooing commercial work as being somehow less valuable than the visionary work of the singular vision of an artist. Now, before anybody counters me on this, I've gone on record many times to talk about having a vision for a project is essential. But it is also a component of a larger machine that's at work in your brain when you're putting together a project. I'm talking about on the ground getting stuff done kind of strategies. And for that, borrowing, once again, from the commercial artist's bag of tricks can be an immense help. Dan Mishkin once said to me that the difference between his generation of comics writers and the current generation of comics writers is if he were to walk into his editor's office and say, "Do you want it done right? Or do you want it done Monday?" He said his editor would respond with, "I want it done right and on Monday." And that's what most clients are going to tell you. So I think that sometimes we can go too far into this idea of preserving some kind of artistic vision, or at the very least, the artistic vision can bewilder us into never finishing something and keep noodling and keep picking at it when just getting a big stack of drawings done is what's really important. I also think about when I was in college, the difference between different art instructors. There were the art instructors who really kind of relished in the amount of knowledge and expertise that they had. And they liked the life of academia where they were the expert, you were the student, and you just listened to them. And everything they said was very measured and careful. A lot of umming and aahing and a lot of really agonizing over proper word choices, sort of like what I do sometimes. And then there was another drawing instructor who he came into class with like essentially a brown bag full of drawings. And he just had this huge stack of drawings on his desk all the time. And when you asked him, "Well, why don't you have it in a fancy art case? Why don't you have it in a fancy portfolio?" He's like, "Look, I just love to draw and I'll always make another one." And his attitude was always in the spirit of play, but with an eye on just getting stuff done. Right. So there's perfection and then there's getting stuff done. There's the challenge. And somehow I managed to meander my way into this talk about perfection when really what I was trying to do was to defend commercial style storytelling. but anyway, yeah. And I do think that sometimes that this is where I can close out with my concern about my own career is that I wonder sometimes, if that's what's stopping my work from really grabbing on to the public at large is grabbing on to the imagination of the public at large. I've put my work in front of publishers and editors and agents, and for some reason it hasn't taken with any of them yet. I've had some successes in terms of getting hired by companies like Glencoe McGraw-Hill, Antarctic Press, and did that Marvel work recently, but nothing to where, you know, I'm getting where I'd like to land is I wouldn't mind at any rate getting published through a First Second or a Top Shelf or something like that. I think that would be really nice. I haven't aggressively pursued it in a while, but I remember when I was pushing some of my ideas at them, like the kind of stuff I do on sugarycereals.com, like Equalizers of the Divide, Silver and the Periodic Forces, Switch Runners. I wonder if perhaps my fascination with replicating that commercial style storytelling is working against me sometimes, because if it comes off as being too commercial, an audience might interpret it as being purely commercial and not really having a vision behind it. I don't know. That's one of those little candid moments where I share one of the kind of anxieties that I wrestle with. And when I say anxiety, it's a minor anxiety because I'm having too much fun drawing the stuff that I draw. So I don't, and I'm at an age where, you know, I'm probably not going to change anytime soon, but who knows? You never know what life's going to throw at you. So, okay, I think that mess of thoughts you heard today is going to be where I close. Recording in the car with all of these different people walking around is distracting me today. I think I'm going to record the next one in the studio. So who am I? I'm Jersey Droz, jdroz.com, Jersey on the Twitters. Thank you very much for supporting us in this project. We really couldn't do it without you. And I don't have anything else to point people at. I don't think anybody listening to this is in the Southeast Michigan area. Well, some of you are. I posted on my blog at comicsaregreat.com and on the Twitters, Mini Comics Day is coming up on March 9th at 11 o'clock a.m. to 6 p.m. in Southeast Michigan. I know there are, this is part of this thing called the Cartoonist Conspiracy, and there are Mini Comics Days going on around the United States right now. So just do a search for Mini Comics Day or the Cartoonist Conspiracy to find out more information. But if you follow the link on the Comics Are Great site, I link to the University of Michigan page where they talk about it, and they actually link to the Cartoonist Conspiracy site and to the official Mini Comics Day event listing or event page, so you can find out if there's something going on in your neck of the woods. What is it? It's basically 24-hour comic day, but for mini comics. So for 7 hours, they have a public location where cartoonists from all around the area can get together and try to finish a mini comic in 7 hours. That sounds like a fun challenge. As I said before, I don't like the idea of 24-hour comic day, but I do like the idea of setting like an 8-hour block, 7-hour block to try to get something done. That is compelling because it's not going to be as physically taxing, and it is achievable, I think. So you might want to check that out. In any case, I will be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember, everybody,
today was a day for surprises, and the biggest one of all was Skeletor and He-Man working together. By joining their powers, He-Man and Skeletor were able to stop Evil Seed. Working with others can sometimes be difficult, but if you listen to and respect the ideas of others, even when you don't agree with them, you'll find it's easier to get the job done. And who knows, you may even learn something.